regaining the center. So just a kind of metaphor, a tone setting theme. If we consider it, we might occasionally reflect that a lot of the time we feel pulled or driven, not clearly balanced and poised, but actually impelled, driven, dragged, blocked, weighed down. There are forces that are pushing, driving, frustrating, freezing, locking, imprisoning us in just about manageable ways. You know, we are pretty flexible. We can, like jelly, we can squash ourselves into all kinds of shapes, or get squashed into all kinds of shapes and patterns. Very pliable. But we all recognize stress does build up, and it doesn't actually feel like I'm living an authentic life, my own life. I'm living a life that's actually controlled by forces that are not my welfare. They're not giving me peace and happiness and stability and steadiness. They're just driving me. As if I've somehow, you know, been pushed off kilter. I mean, these, of course, are social forces. What other human beings' social forces do to us? Social pressures, work pressures, obligations. So, in retreat, we perhaps get a chance to have this question floating. Well, what is my center? What does that actually mean? It means perhaps things I feel, yep, really feel comfortable with this. This is where I want to be. This is not leaving bits of me out. This is not squashing me into unfortunate shapes. You know, I've got my own feet on the ground and I've just been driven along. Yeah, that's, I can get a sense that's what I'd aspire to look for. So the regaining might be about, you know, both severing or loosening those ties and forces that push us around, and amplifying or bringing to fruition qualities that give us steady, balanced presence. And I suggest this is cultivation. It doesn't happen without some degree of careful application and supportive context to encourage that, hence retreat, reset. This sense of having a center, although it's sort of suggestive rather than something we can actually nail down as this, that and the other, because, you know, you say we are it. So you can't get outside it to say, because you are it. But that sense, you know, as that's played out, we refer to the consciousness model, which is our normal reference point. Well, this is me, this is the me bit, and there's everybody else around me. Yeah. There's the future in front, the past behind, so-and-so's 500 kilometers away, she's there, I'm here, there's the roof, so forth. I'm the center of this, and this is all happening around me. That's what consciousness will do, won't it? Visual consciousness is going on around me. Mental consciousness, I'm right here now, I've got to do that tomorrow, yesterday, I'll remember her, forget about those people. It's all juggling in a world that seems all-encompassing around us, as it's sometimes expressed. This is a consciousness model. It's actually not consistent, because there are six consciousnesses. Visual consciousness really does that job very well. But actually, it can't see all round. It only sees a certain scan. So we assume, yeah, there's something behind me. Of course there is. I turn around, I can see it. We actually go to direct experience, we can't see it. We assume it. Auditory consciousness, that's pretty good. I can hear most things that seem to be around me. Can't hear very far at all. Doesn't give me very clear distinctions. I can't immediately tell whether that's a fly buzzing in my ear or somebody operating a machine 500 meters away. So it's not that good at really getting location, but it gives you a sense of being wrapped up in something. Of course, then we get the smell, which jumps into us. Taste throws itself down us. Body, tactile consciousness, our skin can feel space around, but it can't go very far. Yeah. It can only sense what's touching it, either the absence of pressure or something pleasant or painful. It doesn't really know whether I'm in India or South Africa or Belgium. So it's not great on that level. It doesn't do suppositions, can't plan anything. Then we get the mind consciousness, which is the dominant one. And certainly that's great at wrapping all these other ones together, say, that's her name, she looks like this, she was that 5 years ago, she was there, I remember her from then. It really adds in a lot of details, which are mind created. And also not that accurate. They're all my opinions, and my memories, and my expectations, my assumptions, my projections. Not really that accurate, but very solid. And I get the sense of in the centre of this lot. What something smells like isn't what it looks like. Right? What it looks like isn't what it feels like when you touch it. So they don't really add up. So in this bizarre collage of consciousnesses, with the mind kind of trying to wrap it all up into something that's consistent, but isn't. Yeah. What he looks like isn't necessarily a good readout of what his behaviour's about, is it? We've all done that one. So in the midst of this lot, I somehow seem to be the kind of centre of all this is happening to me. And it doesn't add up in a very consistent way. How do I get a proper orientation within all that? So I can't really trust consciousness as an unbiased arbiter of reality. Where am I going to get my true readings from? My orientation from? Well, that's what chitta's about. This word, one of the most important words in Buddhism, perhaps the most, because it's that which can give us a true orientation, get clarified, become firmly established, and be released from pressures, stress, confusion, pain. Very important. And sometimes this is translated as consciousness, but because there's another word, vijnana, which refers to this six senses that I've referred to, make a distinction. Called citta is heart, or you could say it's the center. It's the affective centers where we feel affected and where responses come from. We're touched by a sight, a sound, a thought, a memory touches citta. Oh, there's a response. Oh, yeah. There's a resonance. Oh, yeah. Oh, what's that? That shimmer. That shimmery sensitivity, that's the guide that needs to be massaged, brought on its feet, brought to the fore, bait washed down, fed. Okay, I trust you. Give me a lead. And that when we refer to this experience, which we all have, it can seem not a great bet because it can feel very bruised, crushed, wavering, easily knocked around. Suddenly prone to all kinds of funny whims and fantasies, capsizing occasionally, getting overwhelmed with moods and feelings. So this? Yep, that. That's the one that can rise like the moon through the clouds, is the expression that's used. Clouds, the moon's always there, the clouds obscure it. It can rise like the moon through the clouds, and it's bright, shining. Called the luminous citta, shining citta. Center. What's needed? Well, I guess you ask yourself. Recognizing you have to often work through the rather confused medium of the mind, which is, it's got its skills, but it's often programmed. We're indoctrinated. Quite deliberately into job, nationality, age, gender, so forth. What we should be and what we shouldn't be. This indoctrination can be pretty intense because it applies certain pressures to our lives and certain restrictions. You can't do that. You're not allowed that. That's not suitable. That's not cool. That's ugly. So this kind of indoctrination program can take over the mind till we really don't think for ourselves. We think along certain habits, patterns, which are about gaining and getting and the future and work and so on. That's life. Yeah. But then there are things that turn the mind around, such as mortality help to turn the mind around. So, you could die tomorrow. What was all this about? What was all that project planning expectation about? Could die tomorrow. Could die today. I don't think about it. Well, why not? It happens to be true. And then look at that, turns the mind around. Mind, instead of, oh, what I'm going to get, I'm not going to get and have, I'm going to lose, basically. What's really worthwhile here? Integrity, fearlessness, courage. Okay. Turning the mind around. Let's let go of grudges, let go of resentment, let go of all that stuff. Let's focus on things we can feel a bit more uplifted by. In fact, we refer to the heart. Death turns the mind towards the heart. That's why it's one of those subjects for frequent recollection. Because when this mental stuff is seen as limited fallacies, there's a turning towards something more timeless, not bound up with circumstances, not based upon personality, but qualities of heart. And recognizing this heart, however confused and sore it gets, it does have these residual, it's primarily a good thing, primary goodness, fundamental goodness with confusion, it, you know, blocking it, blocking access to it. So this is really, you know, something like this, turning the mind around, turning towards the heart. We come to a very kind of fundamental view, the awakened ones, the Buddha's awakened ones have, is we're not fundamentally sinful or fundamentally lost or fundamentally stupid, we're fundamentally good. And we got hoodwinked. You know, and we got confused by all this sense consciousness stuff and all the program that goes into it. Like, get one of those, you'll be happy. Buy one of these, you'll be fine. Then everything's gonna be okay, you get here. You know, death. So what's the wish? I'd like to live the life of integrity, value, honesty, generosity. You go straight to the heart. That's why this somewhat seemingly grisly contemplation is considered a great remedy in contemplative circles. Yeah. We also turn the mind around reflecting, you know, perhaps on, we have the capacity to bring forth the good. It's called karma. It means, you know, I can't really do that much, maybe. Maybe my body's a bit weak, my brain isn't that great, I'm kind of getting on a bit. But I can bring forth some good. It is just giving somebody a smile, you know? Or forgiving somebody, or asking for forgiveness for the things that, you know, maybe, that's good. Nothing really stops me from doing good, really. Yeah. So remember this account of the Tibetan monk Paulden Gyatso comes to mind, because such an amazing example, someone who is a Tibetan monk, beaten up, tortured, imprisoned by the Chinese communist regime over 30 years, with cattle prods, blown all his teeth out, seeing his friends tortured and killed, submitted to continual interrogations, screamed at, starved, you know, everything. So he just kept himself alive. So all I could do was just practice compassion for the people who are torturing me. I could do that. Took a bit of doing, but I could do that. I could just keep my faith and compassion. Without that, he would just gone completely mad. Emma Yane is not that bad, really. So you don't get the evening meal. So you get up a bit early, you know. So we think that this is called good karma. And karma, people often understand that to be just this kind of, I've got a lot of karma, in other words, sort of like a whole lot of stuff that I've inherited, which is actually called vipaka. Vipaka karma, or results, or what's been done to me. We can carry these weights of the residues, but perhaps more optimistically and brightly, karma means we have the potential to act now. An action doesn't necessarily involve the body or speech, it's that inflection of intention. I can regard this person with a kindly gaze rather than just so what? You know, that is the beginning of it, mental karma. And of course, you know, just I'm sitting on my own, can I regard myself with a kindly gaze? Can I regard what I call myself? You know, which is my energies, my mind states, my appetites, my worries, just with a sense of, you know. Well, I can't immediately say, okay, behave yourself, stop all that. But I can regard that with a sense of, well, that sounds a bit difficult. Yeah, that does sound difficult. Let's just give it some sense of care, gentleness, see how we can work with this. Even that is good karma. We have the potential for that. And the encouragement is to do it. You know, it doesn't mean you've got to walk 1,000 miles. But just this inflection of good intent and getting more skilled at it to whatever, whoever, however I can. Yeah, and maybe I'm not up to forgiving torturers right now. Perhaps that's beyond my measure, but I can start with this. So I'll just do that. Practice with this. And the theme is that the more you cultivate it, this is heart cultivation. This takes us back to the heart. This is where intention comes from. The more you cultivate it, the heart gets stronger, richer, bigger. Yeah, I think I can actually extend it a little further. It naturally extends further. This is called a natural progression. A snowball rolling downhill. Take a little thing, doesn't seem very big to me, just get it moving. So there we get in that, give you a sense of what is the momentum, what is the growth potential, how does that happen? Yeah. What's effort? Because once you've pushed that snowball, you don't have to keep running behind it, pushing it. It will roll. Right? So that's just an image, of course, but can we, you know, find that true intention, or that cultivation of intentionality, and stay with it, as scenarios change around us, as my body gets painful, as my mind gets dull and limp, as things seem suddenly urgent or important or contradictory, can I maintain that and maintain it against the currents of consciousness? It's like, you know, once again the sailboat moving through these currents. It learns how to tack, you know, it learns how to adjust, you know, but it retains its own fundamental integrity and wholeness, and you just hold it there, and it's almost as if the energies that come to contradict that are actually captured and transformed into positive energy. It's a kind of metabolism. Okay, you know. So as if the energies that come to contradict it, to push us, maintaining that, it got the power to transmute that into skillfulness. You know, so if things are going my way, that's nice. And that's nice. But the growth points are when I'm having to maintain things not going my way, which I could get a bit upset about. But rather than getting upset, I just go, okay, that's that. And the heart rises. Don't cave in. Don't lash out. Just hold it. And it rises, and the energy, you know, amplifies. And that's one of the powerful growth points. So actually what we're doing is maintaining wholeness and steadiness within the field of conditions. That's conditions, thoughts, sights, sounds, feelings, ping, 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 ping. Holding that, actually, heart gets stronger. By not adopting them, by not rejecting them, maintaining its own presence. It begins to know itself within all this. And of course, when things are going my way comfortably, right, that's very nice, then my heart intention is, well, how can I share this? I don't want to just get stagnant. What can I do to kind of like, you know, give it a bit, you know? Let's. Yeah. So this is the heart's, it amplifies itself. Yeah. There's no pressure. It's like you know, it's like you just stretch because it feels more comfortable. So if you say the right kind of effort is that persistence and wholeness, where we avoid going into reactivity, and we learn over time to refer to this citta as center. And it's not actually me. And that's a big thing to get a feeling for. Because the me sense is the normal assumed occupant of the center. I'm here, this is my life, I'm doing what I can. Reasonable kind of guy, that's me. Okay, well, let's just review that experience. And it's actually always wavering, isn't it? I'm good on a good day, and I get my little grumpy bits, then I get my lazy bits, and I get my excited bits, and I get my generous bits, my good bits, and bits I feel a bit anxious, a bit frightened sometimes, sometimes vaguely guilty, sometimes worrying about what I should be and do, and what's going to happen to me in the future. That's me. And I've got to remember, oh, what about my aunt and my so-and-so sick, and I better look at them, that's me. And it's really a whole medley of obligations, concerns, good features. It's not a consistent entity at all. But it's definitely got the potential to kind of rigidify. This is who I am. Yeah, you better believe it, because I'm this, you know. Then it rigidifies, becomes stiff. I'm stubborn, obstinate, yeah, domineering, selfish, yeah. And then this kind of medley becomes a kind of an anthem to my rights, an entitlement to be who I am. It gets very difficult, and consequences of that are, of course, very damaging, because it destroys mutuality. This is the tyrant me, and of course the tyrant me will sooner or later turn upon itself. It will start criticizing the heart. The tyrant me will start saying, you know, you're not this, you're not that. Come on, can't you do a bit better than that? You always do that. You've messed up again. Why can't you ever get it together then? Well, you can't meditate either, can you? Let's face it, you're fake. So the tyrant me will certainly attack the heart. So you want to kind of really review that and all the things that build it up. I'm going to be, I will be, I am. So I don't know, actually. Don't know what I am. I know I become all kinds of things, but it's a consistent entity. I don't know. You know, and then you listen to that. How could you know? Because you know something. When you know something, this thing you know is outside the knower, isn't it? I know that. I'm here knowing that. How could you know yourself? You can't. You can be yourself, but you can't know yourself. Right? When you try to be yourself, you find this kind of range of stuff possible. And then, turn behind that, and there's presence. Yeah, definitely present. Awareness. Yeah, and I do receive things. I do take things in. That's me. Pretty much the same as you, isn't it? And probably the same as a dung beetle. Not a lot of ego in that one. So, okay, well, it's just that. That's good enough for starters anyway, and then we can maybe build around that. And there's the centre. Presence, awareness. If you're walking, you're present with walking. Eating, you're definitely present with eating. Just bringing yourself into presence means already it's a very good practice, because you can see the mind is going, what about next? No, next. What about this? What about that? No. What about that? Just this. How long? No, how long? Just this. It begins to loosen the ties of the driven mind. Because when you get realistic about it, you can only be right here, right now. What might and could and should and ought and will is, who knows? So we just keep loosening those mental tethers and reins that drag us. And then of course you can say, okay, I want to do this, then you can pick them up. But now you're the driver rather than the driven. And say, well, what I want to do really is good. And I'll see how that works out in detail in any situation. Maybe it's just putting the mats out. Maybe it's helping out with washing up. Maybe it's just breathing in, breathing out. Maybe it's remembering my ancestors with gratitude and respect. The whole range. It's heart. Yeah. So this is regaining good karma. And the encouragement is, you know, the Buddha, as an exemplar of someone who seems to have realized this, fulfilled this, gave teachings to encourage this and to lead ways into this, that we can pick up and follow as best we can in our own, according to our own style and disposition. That's pretty generous. No carrots, no sticks. Don't have to. You're not going to get damned to eternity if you don't. Just, there's no carrots and no sticks. This is offered for your welfare. Pick it up as you wish, wherever you wish. That's pretty nice. Yeah. And the possibility that this could be a release from oppression. So we call about citta bhavana, heart cultivation, and naturally this is generally translated in Western terms as meditation. It's so standardized now that I don't really want to argue about it. but I think it's a rather limited term, because as soon as we sense meditation, that word brings in a whole load of assumptions. Meditation is sitting still, lotus, chakras opening, here we go, you know. I don't see that happening really. So meditation is generally failing to meditate. Chakras closing. So or it's just very, very formalized and structured. And that's one of my themes. Did the Buddha teach this? At times, it's a possibility we can, you know, move into as we get more settled, more comfortable, more fluid, more balanced, more at peace with ourselves. We definitely the snowball can roll that way. It can gather into that. So citta bhavana, cultivation of heart. And heart is a very loving and generous medium. It doesn't have these straight lines and boxes in it. But you say, okay, well, heart quality, first, ethical integrity. That's a heart quality. I feel shivery and not happy if I'm going into, you know, bullying, deceitfulness, fudging. No, I don't like that. I like that clarity, openness. Yeah, that's what the heart likes. It's its spine. You could say that's what's its spinal thing. We cultivate that. And we cultivate this expansion, which is essentially goodwill. Devotion is an aspect of it. We just, you know, open to that which we praise and respect. We open our hearts with goodwill. We do that. That's part of it too. And then it's body, because the sense of this kind of process is to whole. It's a holistic process. We can only really be sure of a center if we've got the whole bit on the table. If you only got half yourself on the table, you're able to get a true center. Get the whole thing. Definitely this includes body, because that's one of the things that occur and definitely makes itself felt. So that's got to come in. This is where the citta bhavana begins to become something that's referred to as samadhi, which is a consolidation of heart energies, body energies, and mental energies into a holistic and harmonious unity. That's a long phrase, but it does help to perhaps shake out the word concentration, which generally comes in behind meditation. Meditation is about concentrating, isn't it? Are we supposed to sit and concentrate? What am I supposed to concentrate on? What do I concentrate when I'm walking? Do I focus on my feet or a thought? What do I concentrate on? When I sit, do I concentrate on breathing? When I eat, what do I concentrate on? Move my jaws, taste? What am I supposed to concentrate on? Who told you to concentrate? The Buddha didn't tell us to concentrate. I don't think you're going to find anywhere, at least in the original, fairly original canon of the Buddha's teachings, where he says concentrate on anything. But he does recommend samadhi, this consolidation, collectedness, as a happy abiding that we can enter into. So you don't do it, you enter it. So if we don't concentrate, what are we going to sit and just dither? Ruminate? No, there's something called mindfulness that helps to kind of contain He's collecting certain things, mindfulness, and particularly being aware of the power of sense consciousness, just to kind of turn down the lights on that so we can listen more clearly to the light of the heart. So it's called restraint, restraining the visual, particularly the visual and the mental stuff with its urgencies and trembles. And we turn towards the heart. And bring up these heartful qualities. And they will have their effect, because the heart is a growing baby. Babies, you don't have to tell them to grow, they do it. The heart, when it senses a bit of truth and freedom, senses some goodwill, starts to listen up, come forward, grows up. And that's the movement. As that movement comes to fruition, the heart begins to be more steady and unified. Now the samadhi bit, or you could say the meditation bit in all this, is the ability to sense the inner body. I don't know if I lost you there, but this, which is pretty much, in many cases, the somatic counterpart to our emotions. Okay, so if we get frightened, the inner body shivers, tenses up. If you're glad and happy, it tends to radiate and expand. Yeah. Feel hurt, it shakes. Emotionally assaulted, our inner body shakes. And you can feel it. You can feel it happens in your skin, in your guts. It sort of makes itself felt. Sometimes called subtle body, because it's not made out of the coarseness of the flesh. It's not about muscles. Inner sensitivity. So again, if you ask the question, when you're feeling happy, where's that being felt? Where do you feel it? Well, I feel happy in my heart. Where's that? Oh, it's probably my chest. Or I feel really unhappy. Where's that? I feel this kind of queasy sense in my guts. These emotional resonances do shift around in this system. So why bother with all that? Because rather like the wonky, scattered heart, the stressed, compressed inner body can rejuvenate if we massage it carefully and give it space and give it fresh air and give it time. And then it gives all its power, its energy, its firmness to the process. So it acts as the support for the heart. So qualities of heart that might be beautiful but can be knocked astray, like we experience trust and you know, generosity, and somebody betrays us, the heart shatters. The body gives that sense of, I'm holding it no matter what you do. A certain firming up. So this is what this firming up and this backing up of the inner body is what brings around samadhi effect. Why bother? Because it gives you strength and it gives you happiness. And from there you've got a platform where you can start to say, okay, now I'm really here, I'm not compressed, I'm not distorted, I'm not driven, I'm not... What's valid, what's useful, what's helpful, how much, when? Now I'm in the driver's seat, or the heart is in the driver's seat. And I'm also wary of my egotistical takeovers. I've got it together, I am one of these, I'm now half enlightened or quarter, no. You keep reflecting how that self-sense can jump in and take over. No, this is purer than that. So this is how, and then this is sense of things come together. So if we're not going to concentrate, we're going to be mindful instead. Means we've set up a certain frame, reference, we have the four frames. Really, ideally, although they're considered four frames of what body, feeling, citta, and the phenomena that citta comes up with, good and bad, yeah, ill will and goodwill, four of them. You do all four together. It's like a table, you don't have one leg on a table. You do, but you've got four. Then the table's really steady. So you cover it four, all four. How do you do that? Well, because in your inner body, you can sense feeling, yeah? There's the feeling, agreeable, disagreeable. That kind of wants to push and shove and entice or repel. Stay steady. Be aware of that. You have presence, you have awareness, be present, aware, there's the feeling moving through. So you're aware of second feeling. You're not frightened of feeling, you're not fascinated by it. Yeah. Citta, within this very body you can sense heart. Yeah, as that sensitivity and awareness that can experience, can be affected by love or hate, and you can feel those shimmerings and effects in your body. You feel yourself brightening or contracting. You feel your citta being compressed or scattered. You feel it being uncompressed and steady within this very embodied experience, internal body. Then you can also contemplate, ill will feels like this, goodwill feels like that. Okay. Where do they go? Which ones lead to strength, which ones don't? Yeah, you've got some sense of being able to mediate how these effects occur, what triggers them, and where they go. So it gives you a good kind of plan or a good workshop to citta bhavana, cultivate, liberate, improve the citta. And the results of that are the citta becomes collected and steadied. Mindfulness. That doesn't stand alone either. Mindfulness is one of the group. Begins with faith, the willingness to try, to have confidence in one's own heart, no matter what. Energy, the ability, the willingness to back it up. Mindfulness, the willingness to establish a simple focus and read what's going on. Collectedness, the gathering together, discernment, to be able to assess which way you want your heart to travel. And these supports then give us a way of dealing with the flow of time and circumstance as it washes over us.